Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, January 5th, 2023. City of Marfa's short-term rental regulations to be enforced in 2023. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Effective January 1st, the City of Marfa's revamped short-term rental, STR, ordinance, which calls for increased permit fees, proof of insurance, and self-reporting safety checks, marks the first time the municipality will enforce laws both long on the books and newly adopted relating to vacation stays. At the last City Council meeting of 2022, Council voted to approve the new STR ordinance, which further built off of an existing ordinance first established in 2007. Discussion over the town's abundance of STRs and lack of affordable housing for locals prompted the reassessment of the ordinance this past fall. It was a council's suggestion. They wanted to take a look at the way we were collecting fees and enforcing the ordinance, said City Manager Mandy Roan. When we started looking at what needed to be done, we realized that there was going to be a huge time commitment. Kelly Perez, who previously served as city secretary, but is now transitioning into her role of records clerk, has been building a list of the STRs in Marfa, utilizing sites like Airbnb, VRBO, and more, so the city can better track who is operating STRs and make sure the new ordinance is being followed. Roan said while the city has been criticized in the past for enacting things it can't enforce, getting a better handle on local STRs in the wake of the pandemic and new administration is a priority. Greater enforcement has been something that council has been very clear that they want done since I came on board. This is us doing that. We're following through on this. We have tailored it in a way that we feel like we can enforce it, said Roan. In order to legally operate an STR in Marfa, a permit from the city must be obtained. Permits cost $500 and will need to be renewed annually. An additional cost of $100 per unit applies. The new fees will pay for part of Perez's salary as the new records clerk and cover the work of other city employees, such as the city manager, city attorney, and utilities staff. STRs are required to have separate meters and pay commercial trash. There's a lot that goes into it. We're being much more thorough than we were in the past, said Roan. The fee also includes membership to the Texas Hotel Lodging Association, THLA, with which the city registers Marfa STR owners for $175 each. Membership to the THLA is not required by law, but is considered a best practice, said Roan, because the THLA offers legal counsel, training, and resources for STR owners. Members of the THLA traveled to Marfa this past August to host public meetings on STRs and Hotel Occupancy Tax, HOT. The city will also begin to enforce the collection of the HOT taxes that STRs are required to pay the city per its existing ordinance. STRs are required to pay taxes to the state and local governments. In Marfa, the tax rate is currently 7%. According to state law, Hot revenue can only be used by a city to promote tourism, arts and culture, and historic preservation. There have been previous discussions at the city level about what it might look like to be able to utilize hot funds more creatively in order to help with city infrastructure or other projects, but the city is restricted in how it can use the funds by the state, and discussions are ongoing. The city recently sent out letters to 212 individuals Perez believed to be operating STRs, informing them of the permit fees and additional requirements. The city's goal is to obtain the STR permit fees by the end of February, said Roan. There will be a 30-day grace period, and those not in compliance will be subject to a $2,000 fine. The city will distribute packets to STR operators, including copies of the ordinance, a registration form, information on how to calculate the permit fee, a tax remittance form that details requirements and how-tos for the quarterly hot payments, helpful phone numbers for city departments, and more. The safety inspection requirements are new and consist of a self-reported checklist, which confirms that STR operators have functioning safety features like smoke detectors and more on the premises. The city's extraterritorial jurisdiction, or ETJ, which was included in the original 2007 ordinance and is still included in the new ordinance, the ETJ is anywhere a half mile outside of the city limits, meaning Antelope Hills is not included and only part of Sal Cipuedes is included. Perez said she was only aware of a small number of STRs operating in the ETJ. Whether or not to restrict the number of STRs utilizing zoning requirements, similar to the policies adopted by the cities of Austin and San Antonio, has also been a topic of discussion as of late, but is not currently being pursued with the new STR ordinance. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster swears in new Presidio County Judge Jose Joe Portillo Jr. at the inauguration of new Presidio County officials held this week at the county courthouse in Marfa. New Presidio County government sworn in at inauguration ceremony by Allegra Hobbs. ALLEGRA at BigBenSentinel.com by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. Upon the ringing in of a new year, a new county government was sworn into office on Tuesday at a heavily attended inauguration ceremony in the Presidio County Courthouse. Local citizens and family members packed into the courthouse chamber to witness the newly elected officials take oaths of office before partaking in a generous spread that included chili cooked by County Commissioner Precinct 4, David Beebe. The ceremony began with Presidio County Judge Jose Portillo, then still County Judge-elect by a matter of minutes, welcoming attendees and expressing optimism regarding the elected officials that would soon be serving Presidio County residents. "I'm excited about the team that we have coming on board," said Portillo. "I think we're going to do you a bang-up job." Portillo was then sworn in by Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster, a longtime personal friend and mentor. The newly robed Portillo then swore in Presidio County District Clerk Florcita Zubia, Justice of the Peace Precinct 1 Dina Jo Marquez, Presidio County Treasurer Francis Garcia, and County Commissioner Precinct 1 Margarito Hernandez. County Commissioner Precinct 4 David Beebe was sworn in by his father, Roger Beebe, who 8 years prior had also sworn his son into his previous role as Justice of the Peace, Precinct 1. "I'm really proud to be here today," said Beebe, as he introduced his father, before giving a tongue-in-cheek nod to those who helped him along the way. "I want to thank everybody who helped me, the people who may not have helped me, but actually did help me," he said. The ceremony was capped off with the robing of Justice of the Peace Marquez, whose father did the honors. Folks in attendance were encouraged to stay for refreshments and conversation, and to ask any questions they may have for their newly elected officials. Precinct 2 Justice of the Peace Juanita Bishop was sworn in at a separate ceremony in Presidio, with her son Mason by her side. Bishop, who has served since 2009, has traditionally been sworn in Presidio, so she can remain on call. Those gathered felt a sense of hopefulness in the proceedings and the following celebration. "I felt like there was a lot of positivity in the room, a lot of optimism for the next 4 years," said Hillary Beebe, after witnessing the inauguration of her husband, David. "I think we have a lot of good leadership coming in and a lot to be optimistic about." Judge Portillo remarked that his swearing-in feels very humbling and that he was eager to get to work serving the residents of Presidio County. Portillo is the first county judge to hail from Presidio, the county's most populous city, which shares a border with Mexico, a vital relationship Portillo hopes to foster during his tenure, beginning with the long-awaited completion of the rail bridge between Ojinaga and Presidio. "Mexico and the United States are great trade partners. We have a port of entry. We have a rail. We're on the cusp of getting it done and making it a significant port of entry. And that's why we're going to need our relationship with Mexico to make sure those things can happen," he said. Portillo said he planned to meet soon with Texas Representative Eddie Morales and with the Texas Department of Transportation regarding the bridge's progress. Later that evening in Presidio, the American Legion, where Portillo serves as post commander, through a reception with food provided by Iris Galindo of Mayahuel Ojinaga and music by Roxy Cabello. Presidians packed the Legion Hall to hear brief remarks from Portillo's brothers. Though the siblings poked plenty of fun at each other, they fought back tears as they recreated the official robing ceremony for the crowd. "You're the man for the job," said Roberto Portillo. "We are all truly blessed, and I am humbled to be your brother." Portillo, who began his career in law enforcement, said that it had been a long journey to the top. "I feel the weight of the county on my shoulders," he said. "Everything that I've been through has prepared me for the job I'm about to do." In his brand new robes, Portillo introduced Margarito Hernandez, freshly inaugurated as county commissioner for Precinct 3. "It's about teamwork," Hernandez said. "It's not just about the North or the South. It's about doing what's best for Presidio County." After a holiday boil water notice, City Council discusses aging infrastructure. By Allegra Hobbs. Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. On Christmas Day, Alpine residents' holiday spirits were dampened by an unfortunate and unwanted gift. A notice from the city instructing them to boil their water before consumption in order to avoid harmful bacteria. The notice was necessary due to a water main line break on North Highway 118 near the U.S. District Court. Though the break was initially thought to be from the cold, it was later discovered that the bedding around the pipe had caved in and caused it to crack. Repair crews were hard at work repairing the line on Christmas evening and into the next day, The size of the break meant that a portion of the pipe would need to be replaced entirely. Mayor Catherine Eves announced via Facebook, making the project a time-consuming undertaking. Though the line was repaired by the evening of December 26th, the water department was required to bring samples to Odessa for diagnostic testing to ensure it would be safe to consume. Those test results were in by December 28th, at which point the boil water notice was officially lifted. In the meantime, Mayor Eves encouraged residents to spread the word about the notice to those who may not have access to social media or may not listen to the radio. Posters announcing the notice were distributed at Porter's and True Value, and information was shared on the city website. The notice was also distributed via a reverse 911 system called HyperReach. The mayor encouraged residents to sign up for the service in order to receive such emergency notifications moving forward. At Tuesday's city council meeting, the first of the year, and the first meeting since the main break, locals and city employees heaped praise on the workers who braved the frigid weather on Christmas to repair the line, and the citizens who kept their spirits up by delivering food and drink to the workers. Bottled water from the food pantry of Alpine was distributed by the Alpine Police Department as residents waited out the notice. "I am so proud of Alpine and how we pulled together and worked together," said Mayor Eves, who was tuning into the meeting via Zoom as she recovered from illness. The holiday occurrence prompted the mayor and council members to address a larger issue at hand, the city's aging water infrastructure. "We need to get onto this as soon as possible, I think, because we're going to have more situations like this occur as time goes on," said Mayor Eves. Councilmember Judy Stokes also urged her fellow council members to prioritize infrastructure repair and argued a larger budget was necessary to do so. "I would like to be the council that fixes these water pipes, that fixes these roads, but we're not going to do it with the current budget," she said. "This is our house," she continued. "We're gonna have to fix it." In an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, City Manager Megan Antrim clarified that in this particular case, the main break was not due to aging pipes. The crack was actually caused by, quote, "improper bedding," end quote, meaning the contractor had dug the trench, installed the pipe, then dumped the soil back into the trench to cover the pipe. That approach means bedding that includes rocks is put back over the pipe, and over time, the movement from those rocks can chip away at the pipe, eventually causing a crack. "Still," said Antrim, "comments about needing to repair the city's infrastructure are correct. Large sections of the water lines were last replaced around 2003 and 2004. There's still other parts of town that need to be addressed," said Antrim. "It's an ongoing maintenance program. An overall maintenance program will address infrastructure needs," said Antrim. "Tackling a larger project to replace water lines also means ensuring bedding is done properly to prevent incidents like the one that happened on Christmas from occurring in the future. It's very relevant because it's being prepared for incidents like this," she said. The city is currently developing a strategic plan with the goal of managing city needs like ailing infrastructure. A series of town halls were held last year to gather citizen input. Next week, the city will host its first prioritization meeting to discuss what needs should be prioritized, and the public is encouraged to attend. The meeting will take place on January 12th at 5:30 p.m. in the City Council chambers. Marfa ISD School Board seeks new member. Deadline for applicants is January 12th. By Mary Cantrell. mkcantrell@bigbensentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Independent School District Board of Trustees is soliciting letters of interest from community members willing to fill a vacancy on the board with a deadline of January 12th. We want someone that will bring their own unique voice and perspective to our team and work with the rest of the board members, said Teresa Nunez, board president. Interested and qualified parties are encouraged to submit a letter detailing their desire to serve on the board no later than 3:30 p.m. Thursday, January 12th. Letters may be dropped off at the superintendent's office or mailed. School is still out for winter break, meaning offices will be closed until January 10th. If mailed, letters must be addressed to Teresa Nunez, Marfa ISD Board of Trustees, Post Office Box T, Marfa, Texas, 79843. The board will review applications, potentially interview candidates, and appoint a new member at their next regular meeting on Monday, January 16th at 6 p.m. Applicants are encouraged to attend the January 16th meeting, which will be held in the district's administration building, located just up the stairs next to Martin Field's Lincoln Street entrance. The available seat, place one, has remained vacant since July when the board accepted the resignation of Krista Marquez. At that time, the board opted not to fill the seat due to the impending bond election and start of the 2022-23 school year. The term for the vacant seat is unexpired, meaning the chosen candidate will serve until May 2023, at which time their seat will be up for re-election. In the recent past, school board members have been appointed rather than elected by the public due to few candidates. School board members serve 3-year terms. The school board is made up of 8 community members, including Superintendent Oscar Aguero. They hold public meetings monthly and often hear from district staff as well as discuss facility updates, budgets, school activities, employee pay, students' academic progress, and more. Over the past year, the topic of failing district infrastructure led the board to put a $57 million school bond on the ballot for a new K-12 campus, which failed to win voter approval in the general election this fall. A strategy for how to proceed with another bond initiative is among the board's current challenges. The school board has also recently been participating in Lone Star Governance, board training provided by the Texas Education Agency, focused on improving student outcomes and more. In order to qualify as a board member, candidates must not be an employee of the school district, must have been living within the state of Texas for at least 12 months, and within MISD's jurisdiction for at least 6 months. Their district takes up the majority of Presidio County. Applicants must be qualified voters, United States citizens, 18 years or older, not have been convicted of a felony or declared mentally incapacitated.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, January 5th, 2023. New Piano Bar opens on Main Street by Nathan Heuer. 2 years ago, local longtime attorney Albert Valadez envisioned developing a unique venue and bar in Fort Stockton that would be enjoyable for a multitude of age groups. That vision became a reality on New Year's Eve as hundreds of guests attended the opening of the Centennial Bar and Lounge. I'd give it an A-plus grade in terms of our customer review, Valadez said of the feedback from opening night. They were happy and impressed by their experience. The business features two distinct floors that give customers a wealth of entertainment and variety in one location. The first floor features a full bar with beer on tap, wine, and a variety of liquor that is accompanied by a piano in the front of the building and a pool table in the back, which is separated by a wall and two entrances. In terms of giving different age groups an environment to enjoy, I had that concept in mind. Your older crowd would love to have a quieter place to have drinks and hear each other talk. While a more peaceful environment is the setting when you walk through the entrance, a place for those looking to dance or listen to music geared towards younger generations can be found on the second floor. Your younger crowd has a place to dance and a second-story view that they won't be able to find in any other place. The second story features a bar with liquor, wine, and canned bottled beer. Seating is available for those wanting to relax and enjoy an atmosphere suited for their preferences. One of the important aspects of the building that may not be observed by the consumer is the ornate etched glass that can be seen at the top of the staircase towards the front of the building. The unique material prevents the music being played upstairs and downstairs to disrupt one another. When you take the stairs around the elevator, you come up to the second floor and you'll see a wall that has this ornate etched glass. That's twofold. That was for the aesthetics and primarily as a sound barrier, so sound doesn't go down that stairwell, nor does it go up. It's very effective. The second floor of the building will be available for rental and is accompanied by a cash bar. Valadez said that he has received 3 inquiries thus far, and if anybody is interested in reserving the space, they may call his law office at 336-7562. Regular business hours begin this week. Centennial Bar and Lounge will be open from 5 to midnight, Tuesday through Thursday, 2 to 1 Friday and Saturday, and 5 to midnight on Sunday. Teacher Organizes Toy Drive in Mexico Border Town by Sean Yorks. When Colette Barragan learned of a Santa run that took Christmas gifts to children in Boquillas del Carmen, Mexico, she always wanted to participate. Long before she came to Fort Stockton, Barragan often visited Boquillas, a Mexican border town adjacent to Big Bend, accessible only by boat. And when she learned of the Santa Run, she was unable to participate because her children were too young. Fast forward to 2020, Barragan was a teacher at Fort Stockton High School, but the border crossing to Boquillas was closed due to COVID-19. So when the border reopened right after Thanksgiving 2021, Barragan decided she wanted to provide gifts to the children across the river. I told my family, I said, I want to do this. I want to take toys down there this year. So I made a few phone calls to make sure I wasn't stepping on anybody's toes and nobody was going to do it. Barragan contacted someone in Boquillas and requested a list of the children in the village, name, gender, and age. The list included 52 names. Between the time we got out for Thanksgiving and the time we got out for Christmas, we had a gift for every single child. It's super important to me to be able to give the kid a gift with their name on it. I wanted those to be given to them by us. Barragan posted to the Big Bend National Park, Big Bend, Texas, Terlingua, Lajitas, Studi Butte, Alpine, Marfa, Marathon, and Friends of Big Bend National Park Facebook groups and created an Amazon wish list. I started getting packages after packages. I took everything down to my classroom at the high school. Barragan did the same thing this year, and with the help of her students, put everything in chronological order by age of the children. The students are the ones that build the boxes and wrap the gifts. Barragan gave out 49 gifts in 2021 and 106 this past Christmas, and it's not only gifts for the children, she also gives away backpacks full of school supplies, hygiene products, and other supplies to the kids. And last year, every mom got a donated Bath & Body Works lotion. Most of the donations are through social media, and there are people in Fort Stockton that donate. Barragan added, emphasizing that her toy drive is not affiliated with any other organization. I just want to do this, she said, adding that she has always wanted to teach in a foreign country. But since I cannot, this is the kind of next best thing. My husband said the last 2 years, this is all I want to do for Christmas. People always ask me why I do it. I do it because I can, she said. I want to teach my kids at the high school how to give. She asks her students what they think is needed, and Berrigan herself buys items year-round and stores them until next Christmas. This year, each child got 3 gifts in their box, all with their name on it. I want them to get a gift. I don't want it to be a handout. It's kind of simple the way we do it. I guess it's just a passion. Berrigan and the Fort Stockton group were assisted by individuals from Terlingua and elsewhere in distributing the gifts. Free dog and cat vaccine clinic set. In an effort to keep animals healthy in the community, Lucky Two Times Animal Sanctuary and Advocacy Programs is hosting a free vaccination clinic on January 28th at Rooney Park by the baseball fields. National nonprofit organization Petco Love made the clinic possible by way of a grant, which will provide 400 vaccines to Lucky Two Times for the event. This is only possible because of the grant, said Michael Luna. It helps out low-income family members that cannot take their families to the vet to get vaccinations through them. While the clinic is intended for low-income families who have cats and dogs that need to be vaccinated, the event is open to all individuals needing the service. Lucky Two Times is accepting donations of any amount in the clinic to aid their nonprofit organization's operating costs and life-saving efforts. It's a fundraiser as well, so we're hoping people can donate. If they can't, it's free either way. Lucky Two Times will receive 400 shots of feline HCP and canine DAPPV for the clinic. The shots will be given out on a first-come, first-served basis. People who plan to get their animals vaccinated are encouraged to fill out paperwork online in the coming weeks through Lucky Two Times' Facebook page when made available. People are asked to use Facebook or Instagram Messenger service. If people want to get their animal vaccinated and do not have internet access, Luna said they can fill paperwork out upon arrival. Luna thanked the Pecos County Sheriff's Office, who will help with traffic, and Precinct 2 Commissioner Robert Gonzalez for allowing the clinic to be held at Rooney Park. TJ Perkins and our local Sheriff's Department will help us out with community and traffic support. Big kudos to Robert Gonzalez for letting us use the baseball field parking lot for the event. That'll make it easy access for in and out as well. DPPV vaccinates for canine distemper, adenovirus, a hepatitis virus, parvovirus, and parainfluenza. The first vaccination does not provide full immunity. It's very important for puppies to receive a booster vaccine 3 to 4 weeks after the first one. Feline HCP is a quality core vaccine shown to be effective for vaccinations of healthy cats 9 weeks of age or older against rhinotracheitis, caliche, and panleukopenia viruses.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 15th. New mineral processing plant to open next summer near Sandhills. Rockfin Minerals Incorporated, a Houston-based company, broke ground this week on a mineral processing facility in Monahans. The facility will be located next to the Pilot Travel Center near the Monahans Sandhills State Park. Rockfin Minerals facility will process barite and other minerals used primarily in oil and gas drilling operations in the area. The Rockfin group of companies, with over 30 years of mineral processing and mining experience, is the parent company of Rockfin Minerals and is extremely proud to call Monahans the home of its new processing facility. The project cost is approximately $15 million in 2 phases over an 18-month period. The facility is expected to create 25 full-time positions after construction, while employing 50 to 100 personnel during construction. Phase 1 of the facility is expected to be completed by August 2023. For employment opportunities, please contact the facility's general manager, Robert Martinez, at rmartinez@rockfinminerals.com. Max Field, former Lobo athletic director, head football coach, dies at 64. The story was written by Armando Flores. Former Monahans Lobos athletic director and head football coach, Mel Maxfield, was called to a greater cause over the weekend. Maxfield spent the 2018 season in Monahans following the retirement of Mickey Owens. Prior to Monahans, he made a name for himself with head coaching stops at Forney, which included a state championship game appearance in 2000, followed by stops at Burleson and Amarillo before arriving in Monahans. Following his stop in Lobo Land, Maxfield spent a year coaching at Keyes High School in Oklahoma. Until this year, he was an assistant at Bangs High School under his cousin, Kyle Maxfield. Maxfield amassed 244 wins, 119 losses, and one tie over a 32-year head coaching career in Texas. His win total ranks him 40th overall in Texas high school football history. In 2016, he received the Tom Landry Award at a Texas High School Football Hall of Fame dinner. The award is voted on by the Texas High School Coaches Association. It is given to a coach for their overall body of work over an extended period of time. He coached football for over 40 years. His passing on December 11th was less than 2 months after passing his role model and father, G.W. Maxfield, who, along with his mother, Anna Bell Maxfield, preceded him in death. Maxfield is survived by his wife, Jill, and his children, Peyton Maxfield of Rockwall, Kylie Maxfield of Fort Worth, Max Maxfield of Crested Butte, Colorado, and Reese Maxfield of Cleburne. A memorial service is set for Monday, December 19th at 3 p.m. at the Pathway Church in Burleson. No bond for Meza, trial set for January. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. U.S. District Judge David Counts ruled on a motion to stay for Daniel Ochoa Meza on Monday and denied his request for bond, meaning Meza will have to remain in federal custody until his trial. The motion to stay was filed by the U.S. government on November 29th. Judge Counts heard the case last Thursday, December 8th. According to Counts' order, Meza's original bond, which was set by David Fannin, U.S. Magistrate Judge, on November 29th, was reversed. Quote, "After hearing testimony and reviewing the evidence presented, this court finds there is no condition or combination of conditions which would reasonably assure the appearance of Meza as required and the safety of the community, considering all the available information presented to the court. There is clear and convincing evidence that Meza is a danger to the community, as well as a preponderance of the evidence which indicates that he is a risk of flight and danger to the community," the order stated. Meza and his co-defendant, Anthony Bustos, were both arrested on November 15th during drug raids in Monahans and Thorntonville, conducted by the DEA. He was charged with conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance. He faces a mandatory minimum of 5 years imprisonment upon conviction. In the motion to stay, the government laid out their case against Meza, calling DEA Special Agent Douglas McIntyre to testify. McIntyre testified to the details of the investigation into the Hernandez Drug Trafficking Organization, also known as DTO. McIntyre said that Gilberto Hernandez was the leader of the Hernandez DTO, and the investigation involved predominantly cocaine. He said the DEA utilized multiple means of surveillance, including physical and electronic surveillance. Meza was identified as a cocaine distributor for the Hernandez DTO. He would distribute cocaine within the Monahan's area. McIntyre said Mesa received approximately 6 ounces of cocaine per week from Hernandez for distribution. After his arrest, Mesa confirmed with agents that Hernandez was his supplier of cocaine. DEA agents executed a search warrant at his residence at 701 South Wilma Street, where agents located approximately 10 firearms in Mesa's home. One of the firearms had been reported stolen. At his initial appearance, Mesa claimed he made approximately $30,000 to $39,000 per month. He told pretrial services his income varied from $29,000 to $39,000 per month. According to documents filed with the IRS, Mesa claimed he only made approximately $73,000 annually. According to financial documents used to purchase his vehicles, defendant claimed he made approximately $100,000 to $120,000 annually. The pretrial services report showed Mesa owns a home valued at $500,000 and pays $1,800 monthly on a 2022 Ford F-350 with a balance of $99,000, $425 monthly on a 2015 Chevrolet Corvette with a balance of $4,000, and $1,200 monthly on a 2019 Lincoln Navigator with a balance of $48,000. He also reported paying $5,000 monthly on insurance for his business. The pretrial services report also stated Mesa uses cocaine weekly. McIntyre testified that Mesa has family in Mexico. The pretrial services report showed his grandfather, uncles, and cousins all live in Mexico, and he has visited Mexico approximately 5 times this calendar year. During the investigation, DEA learned Mesa takes his roosters to Mexico for cockfighting, and he last traveled to Mexico in November 2022, just before his arrest in this case. McIntyre also related to the court that Mesa has previously owned property in Mexico and that his wife lives in the United States but does not have legal status to be in the United States. Mesa's sister testified on his behalf and told officials he was born in Mexico and became a naturalized United States citizen in 2011. She says he visits Mexico sporadically to visit the doctor and has had 3 surgeries on his ankle in which his parents paid for the last surgery. She also testified that Mesa's brothers and sisters are U.S. citizens and they reside in Monahans and Midland, while his parents also live in the United States but spend time in Mexico because they own property there. The motion stated the evidence weighs in favor of detention and Mesa is a flight risk and his access to considerable assets was concerning. Although Mesa's sister claimed that he only visited Mexico for doctor's appointments, McIntyre said law enforcement had learned he also visits Mexico to engage in cockfighting. Mesa's sister claimed to have no knowledge of his trips to Mexico for cockfighting, his engagement in drug trafficking activities, or about his weekly cocaine use. Although his sister did know Mesa's wife was currently working, she did not know where she worked. Mesa's sister told officials she did not know that Mesa claimed to make over $300,000 per year, and she did not know about how much income he reported to the IRS. His sister did acknowledge their parents visited Mexico frequently. Initially, she stated that when her parents visit Mexico, they stay in Mexico from a few days to about a week at a time. However, on this trip, Her parents have been in Mexico for approximately 1 month, and they were expected back in the United States around Christmas, or about another month. Bustos is currently out on a $20,000 bond. Jury selection and trial is set for January 17th before Judge Counts. West A Street getting $137,000 emergency makeover. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Residents of West A Street will no longer feel as though they are off-roading while coming and going from their homes after the City Council voted to make emergency repairs to the road by ripping out the existing roadway and laying a new one. The pothole-ridden street had become more than a nuisance to the residents, according to City Manager Rex Thee. Quote, "It has become a danger," end quote. West A Street runs along the north side of the railroad tracks from Eva Street to the Monahan's Iron and Metal Yard and has seen an increase in heavy truck traffic since the recycling yard opened. Quote, "We have been repairing the road off and on over the years as needed and completed significant repairs recently, but it all came up after the snowfall melted a few weeks ago," Thee said. A portion of the street is in city limits, while the other half belongs to the county and Precinct 1. Using the allotted road budget and not needing court approval, Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez hired Permian Paving to rip up and repair the county section of the street, leaving just the city section to repair. Quote, "After looking at the street, we noticed traffic driving on the wrong side of the road to avoid the potholes and speed up once they hit the county portion, which was making it really unsafe for other drivers and residents. Quote, "We need to get something done before someone gets really hurt or killed," Thee said. Thee asked Permian Paving to bid for the city's part of the street since they had already been hired by the county to replace the county section of the street. Quote, "Using Permian Paving will save the city money. Because they are already here, we don't have to pay for them to remobilize," Thee said. The bid for the city's portion totaled $87,000, while the county section cost $49,900. The repairs should be completed by the end of the week. In other business, Mayor Adam Steen presented city employees with annual service awards and monetary stipends equal to $15 for each year of service provided. Bobby Sinclair was recognized for 40 years of service, and Joel Melendez was recognized for 20 years of service. Twaya Banks, David Milleron, Pablo Villegas, Caroline Hughes, and Jennifer Merrick were all recognized for 5 years on the job. Not present to accept awards were Claudia Sanchez for 15 years and Jeremy Kynes for 5 years. The city also named 3 safety awards for 2022. All recipients received a $100 check and a plaque. Commissioners move on off-site data storage for county records. Burn ban, fireworks ban renewed. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Monday morning, the Ward County Commissioners agreed to an amendment to an agreement with Local Government Solutions, LGS, to include off-site storage of county data for the county clerks, district clerks, county attorneys, and county judges' offices. LGS specializes in providing comprehensive browser-based information management solutions for counties. Ward County Judge Greg Holly told the court, quote, "This is something Patricia Oyabides brought to our attention, and I have spoken with LGS and Nancy Upchurch, who handles IT for the county, and it seems to make sense to store the data for these offices remotely," end quote. Currently, the data is kept on servers at the courthouse. Quote, "Data storage would be in two different places for redundancy, which is already the procedure in some offices. The pros of remote storage is maintaining, upgrading, and repairing the equipment won't fall on Nancy anymore and will allow for more regular backups. The downside is in order to access the data, internet is required, so if the internet is down, employees will have to go elsewhere, Holly said. Holly added he felt like the pros outweighed the cons and asked the court to consider approving the amendment. The cost will remain about the same, with a $51 increase over the current pricing. The amendment was approved. In other business, the burn ban and fireworks ban were both renewed for another 90 days by unanimous vote. The current drought index in the county is now between 200 to 400, with an average of 332 due to recent rains over the last few months. According to water data for Texas, Ward County averaged 0.8 to 1.2 inches of rain in the month of November. Over 90% of the county falls within the abnormally dry category, while a small northeastern portion of the county is still in a moderate drought. Judge Holly told the court, "We certainly are in a better place, and after speaking with County Fire Marshal Billy Riley, he would suggest renewing both bans, and Riley would continue issuing permits for burns as weather conditions allow." The burn ban prohibits outdoor burning in unincorporated areas of the county. The order does not prohibit the burning of household trash in containers covered by metal grating, outdoor cooking, or burning in metal pits and grills, or other burning activities as permitted by the Ward County Fire Marshal at his sole discretion. Violations are a Class C misdemeanor, punishable by a fine not to exceed $500. The fireworks ban prohibits the sale or use of restricted fireworks in the unincorporated areas of Ward County. The order does not prohibit permissible fireworks such as sparklers fountains, Pharaoh's serpents, caps for pistols, or pinwheels as authorized in Occupations Codes Section 2154. There is no county-designated areas for using fireworks, as had been the practice in years past. The court also approved the appointees to the Ward County Historical Commission. They will serve for 2 years, 2023 and 2024. Appointees are Roy Bean, Teresa Burnett, Tanya Caldwell, John Michael Dominguez, Ellen Fryer, Brenda Kizier, Brenda Melius, Nancy Upchurch, and Jeppy Wilson. In regular business, payment of bills totaling $1.9 million was approved unanimously. The Treasurer's Monthly Report, as submitted by Teresa Stoner, reflected a beginning balance as of November 1st of $85.4 million and an ending balance on November 30th of $85.6 million. Commissioners present were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Nelms. Judge Holly was also in attendance. The next meeting will be held on December 27th at 9:30 a.m. in the Commissioners' Courtroom, located on the first floor of the Ward County Courthouse. The meeting is open to the public.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.